Thank you, Miss Melody. That was a beautiful melody. Very nice. Enjoyed that greatly. It's nice to be able to have special music, isn't it, on a regular basis. You guys are used to that. I'm not, so it is very nice. Well, I hope many of you were able to go back, if you missed it, able to go back and listen to part one. If you were not, I'm sorry, you're going to be lost in the part two sermon today. But no, hopefully you'll catch on. In our story that we began last Sabbath, it was the first of a three-part series. We recounted what it was like for that first and second generation after Joseph's death in Egypt. We have Israel coming down into Egypt. Joseph is there, you know, has been sold into Egypt as a slave. And then his story, turning that around, you know, becomes second in command. So the Israelites gradually found themselves, though, as we went through that story, going from farmers and shepherds living the abundant life in Egypt to helpless slaves cringing under the whip of ruthless taskmasters. It was not the life they expected for themselves. The new Egyptian pharaoh and his advisors, as we saw last week, had deceived them into thinking that they were accepted and welcomed in their land, despite their segregation from the Egyptian people. They lived in the northern Nile Delta section. But in reality, the Israelites began to be treated like animals. As we're going through these sermons, as was mentioned in the sermonette, I appreciated that, we have to think of the spiritual analogies for us today. Sin will appear attractive and inviting, just as the Israelites thought that Egypt was attractive and inviting for them. But once you're living in sin, or even living close to it, you find its ultimate goal is to trap you and then to destroy you. Now, we may look for a way out, but it is hopeless. That's why I wrote about that in the blog yesterday. It seems we have no choice but to remain in sin. Most don't even know that there is another way to live. They think this is normal. There's nothing else. And so as we enter these days of unleavened bread, we've discovered that there is hope for us after all. God has had a plan for us all along, and it's beginning to be revealed to us. So let's begin our story. As I mentioned last Sabbath, and in case you don't know, we're trying to place ourselves into that situation. We're going to look at the lives of typical families and what they went through, what life was like for them, and try to make it as real as possible. Our story begins again after the emotional meeting between Moses and Aaron at Mount Horeb, also known as Mount Sinai. It was time to return to Egypt. Exodus chapter 4, verse 29. Exodus 4, verse 29. Then Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the children of Israel. And Aaron spoke all the words which the Lord had spoken to Moses. But suddenly a voice shouted from a group of 70 elders, "Who do you think you are? How do you expect us to believe your crazy story about our ancestors' God speaking to you from a burning bush that didn't burn up?" Others also began to shout at Moses, "How can you prove this God sent you? God doesn't live anymore. If he does, he doesn't care about us. He's left us here in slavery for 150 years. So get out of here, Moses, Aaron. We don't need any false hope. There's nothing you or anybody can do to get us out of Egypt." And the crowd started moving menacingly toward Moses and Aaron to force them to leave. But Moses raised his arm and he shouted, "Stop, everyone, listen to me. I can prove the God of your fathers sent me." So the elders stepped back, and as they did so, Moses threw his staff onto the ground, and it immediately turned into a large snake. Those close by were stunned by what had happened. His staff became a snake, they shouted to the others. And Moses made everyone stand back away from and form a huge circle around him so that others could see the snake. After a few minutes, Moses approached the snake and grabbed its tail. Immediately, it turned back into his rod. Unbelievable. Wait, Moses shouted to the crowd. There's more. And so he raised his hand for all the people to see. Look at my hand, he said as he walked around the huge circle of the Israelite elders. Returning to the center, Moses then put his hand inside his cloak. And when he pulled it back out, his hand was riddled with leprosy. And Moses approached some nearby men, and they began to fall back in terror. Get away from us! Get away! They shouted. Now, Moses said, now see the power of God at work, he said, as he thrust his leprous hand back into his cloak. Withdrawing his hand, Moses held it high to show the people his hand was now completely normal again. What kind of magic is this? Someone shouted. That's right. That's right. This is just magic. I've seen Pharaoh's magicians do magic tricks like this before. This man, Moses, he's just a magician. He's trying to trick us into following him. Moses looked at Aaron. Go get the large jar of water, Aaron. A few minutes later, Aaron and some other men placed the jar of water in the center of the circle. And Moses asked some of the elders to come forward and see what was in the jar. It's just water, they confirmed. Now see the power of the true God is with me, Moses shouted. And he and Aaron pushed over the jar and the water poured out all over the ground. But just then, Moses touched the tip of his staff into the pooling water, and instantly, all the water became blood. Some of it flowed onto the feet of the men standing nearby. This is blood. Moses has turned the water into blood. There can be no more doubt. This man, Moses, has proven to us that he has been sent to us with the power of the God of our ancestors. Verse 31. So the people believed. And when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel and that he had looked on their affliction, they bowed their heads and worshiped. For most, it was the first time in a very long time. And Joe Israelite, the great-great-great-grandson of the Joe Israelite from 1581 BCE, Joe can't wait to get home to tell his family what has happened today. Rebecca, the God of our fathers, has returned. He sent a man to free us from the Egyptians. We are going to be free. But they had no idea what was about to happen next. The year is 1443 BCE. Exodus 5. Verse 1. Afterward, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness." And Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go." And so they said, "The God of the Hebrews has met with us. Pharaoh, please let us go 3 days' journey into the desert and sacrifice to the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with the sword." And then the king of Egypt said to them, "Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people away from their work? Get back to your labors." So Pharaoh sent them away. Moses and Aaron were disappointed at this unexpected response. Not only had they been rejected, but Pharaoh now decided to make life even more unbearable for the Israelites. Verse 10. And the taskmasters of the people and their officers went out and spoke to the people, saying, "Thus says Pharaoh, I will not give you straw. Go, get yourself straw wherever you can find it, yet none of your work will be reduced." News of this new requirement reached the elders from the Egyptian officers even before Moses and Aaron could make their way back to the camp. Verse 12. And so the people were scattered abroad throughout all the land of Egypt, wherever they could walk to gather stubble instead of straw. And the taskmasters forced them to hurry, saying, "Fulfill your work. Fill your daily quota like when there was straw." Also, the officers of the children of Israel, whom Pharaoh's taskmasters had set over them, were beaten. And they were asked, "Why haven't you fulfilled your task? Why haven't you made bricks both yesterday and today as before?" And life had become even more miserable. And it was all Moses and Aaron's fault. The elders were determined to banish Moses and Aaron once and for all because of Pharaoh's harsh edict. Verse 21. "Let the Lord look on you and judge, because you, Moses, you have made us abhorrent in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to kill us." And they quickly found Moses and Aaron. They shouted at them in their hopeless desperation, "You gave us false hope. You're not from God at all. Get out of here. Leave us alone before we all die." And the next day, the people went back to work like they did every day. And so Israelite's life was made even more miserable. His back was scarred from the continuous beatings. "How can we work any faster? This is impossible," he told his wife as he set out for yet another trip for the long stalks of stubble in the fields. Moses is perplexed. This was not supposed to happen, Moses thought. God sent us to free the people, but instead, their suffering is worse. So Moses decided he would ask God what to do. And God told him, "Speak to the people again." So Moses gathered the elders and as many people as could possibly hear him together. And he said, "Listen to me, Israel. God has spoken to me. He has spoken to me. This is what he said." Exodus 6, verse 6. "I am the Lord. I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will rescue you from their bondage. I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. And I will take you as my people, and I will be your God. And then you shall know that I am the Lord your God, who brings you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you into that land which I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I will give it to you as a heritage. I am the Lord." Standing near the back of the crowd was Joe Israelite. "How can anybody believe this man?" he shouted. "He promised us freedom, but Pharaoh's made it worse. Why doesn't he just go away?" In fact, that's what everybody around him thought. And everyone started shouting at Moses, "Moses, we don't believe you. Get out of here. Quit giving our people false hope." And Moses and Aaron were filled with sorrow for the people. Why wouldn't they believe their words? Why wouldn't they believe it was from God? And Aaron said, Moses, if our own people won't listen to us, how can we expect Pharaoh to pay any attention to us? But Moses knew God would have an answer. So he asked God again, show me what to do next. Chapter 6, verse 22. So Moses returned to the Lord and said, Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why is it you've sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he's done evil to this people. Neither have you delivered your people at all. But God was merciful. And God reminded Moses once again of the covenant that he had made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And God told Moses that he must speak all the things he's commanded him to speak before Pharaoh. But this time, God encouraged Moses with this promise. Chapter 7, verse 1. The Lord said, Moses, I'm going to make you like God to the king, and your brother Aaron will speak to him as your prophet. You are to speak to him with my authority and with a right to command his obedience and with strength to enforce my commands. Verse 3, but I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and I will multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt. But Pharaoh will not heed you, so that I may lay my hand on Egypt and bring my armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand on Egypt, and I will bring the children of Israel from among them. And Moses and Aaron were strengthened and encouraged by these powerful words from God. It was exactly what they needed to hear. Verse 6, Moses and Aaron did so, just as the Lord commanded them, so they did. And Moses and Aaron returned to the palace. This time, Pharaoh asked Moses for proof that he was a representative of God. And as previously instructed, Moses threw down his rod again, and again, it became a large snake. And when Pharaoh's magicians did the same thing, their rods turned into snakes. The first snake devoured all the others. Pharaoh was not impressed. And again, he sent Moses and Aaron away. The plagues on Egypt are about to begin. Now, we don't have the time to thoroughly describe all the first nine plagues that were now to be unleashed on the Egyptians over the course of time. But I hope you can grasp a vision of what it must have been like. Imagine seeing the entire Nile River becoming a river flowing with real blood. Soon a horrible stench filled the air as multiple thousands of fish died floating to the surface. In a matter of hours, the people began to panic as they realized there was no fresh water available anywhere. It seemed that all the water everywhere had become blood, even in the pots and the buckets. So either the Egyptians had to bring water in from outside their borders, or they had to get it by digging deep for fresh springs far away from the banks of the Nile in the northern Goshen Delta. And soon animals began to die of thirst, followed by some Egyptians who were just unable to find water. It's been 3 days, and the suffering was terrible, and many Israelites suffered too. But this was just the beginning. After 7 days, the water began to return to normal, and the Nile flowed with fresh water once again, and the people were relieved. So was Pharaoh. When Moses and Aaron returned with their renewed request to let the people go, Pharaoh once again refused. And you know the story. The next plague, there were frogs everywhere. And the plagues were to continue, one after the other, after the other. Next, it was lice or fleas crawling everywhere on their skin. The terrible itching, the stinging. Meanwhile, Joe Israelite and his family were beginning to wonder, what's happening here? What's Moses doing? What is his God doing? Because they were being affected by these terrible plagues too. Was this God of Moses going to destroy them? Well, I thought Moses said we were going to be delivered from Egypt, not suffer with them. But at least we don't have to go out and gather straw and make bricks and continue working on those buildings. There are no guards with whips anywhere to be found. And the plagues were about to continue again. But now, God was going to show both the Israelites and the Egyptians a very powerful witness. Another plague was coming, a plague of flies, but this time it would be different. Exodus 8, verse 22. And in that day I will set apart the land of Goshen, in which my people dwell, that no swarm of flies shall be there, in order that you may know that I am the Lord in the midst of the land. And I will make a difference between my people and your people. Tomorrow, this sign shall be. And so vast swarms of large biting flies descended on Egypt, but not in the northern adjacent land of Goshen, where the Israelites lived. From then on, none of the coming plagues would affect them. And it may be that they experienced the first three plagues because of their unbelief and to see firsthand the power of the God of Moses. God was going to show Israel his power now, as one by one he showed them that the Egyptian gods that they thought were gods didn't even exist at all. And the people began to believe. But regretfully, Pharaoh had no concern for his people, nor their suffering. He would outlast Moses and his God. Nothing could bring him down. Nothing could make him grant this foolish request of Moses to let the slaves go. But next, it was to be something different. This time, the plague wasn't on the people. It was on the animals. All kinds of livestock belonging to the Egyptians died quickly from a terrible disease. The cattle in the field, the horses, the donkeys, the camels, the oxen, the sheep. So many died. And then soon, all beginning to decay, and the putrid smell of death overwhelming across the nation. And the plagues continued. The next one was going to bring them severe pain. Suddenly their bodies were covered with painful sores or boils. And so Pharaoh again sent for Moses, only to find out from Moses that God's sparing your life, Pharaoh, so that you could continue to witness the power of God. Hailstones are coming next, Moses warned. And Pharaoh scoffed. Hailstones? I've seen hailstones before. If that's all your God is capable of doing, bring them on. Again, he was about to be surprised. Chapter 9, verse 23. And Moses stretched out his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire darted to the ground. And the Lord rained hail on the land of Egypt. So there was hail and fire mingled with the hail, so very heavy that there was nothing like it in all the land of Egypt since it had become a nation. And the hail struck throughout the whole land of Egypt, and all that was in the field, both man and beast. And the hail struck every herb of the field and broke every tree of the field. The replenished inventory of animals are mostly all dead. Tens of thousands of Egyptians now dead. There is suffering and devastation everywhere. Pharaoh still not convinced. Soldiers were dispatched to buy or to steal some livestock and some horses from bordering nations. But yet another plague. This time, the locust. Exodus 10, verse 5. They shall eat the residue of whatever is left, which remains to you from the hail. And the locust shall eat every tree which grows up for you out in the field, and they shall fill your houses. Verse 15. So there remained nothing green on the trees or on the plants of the field throughout all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh's advisors were very worried. Verse 7. Pharaoh's servant said to him, "How long shall this man be a snare to us? Pharaoh, let them go, that they may serve the Lord their God. Don't you know yet Egypt is destroyed?" Apparently not, as Pharaoh once again refuses. The ninth plague comes, and it is terrible and fearsome. As everywhere all around them, it suddenly goes completely black. Verse 22. So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was thick darkness in all the land of Egypt for 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days. They couldn't, because it was absolute darkness. And more people died from hunger and thirst. And the rotting smell of death filled the air everywhere. And there was nothing anybody could do but just sit there or lie down and wait to see if the light would return. It was 3 days later. 3 days of horrible suffering. So once again, Pharaoh shouts for Moses to get out now. Go ahead, take the people. And he quickly changes his mind. With great solemnity, Moses now begins to describe to Pharaoh that God will send one final plague. Chapter 11, verse 4. Then Moses said, "Thus says the Lord, about midnight I will go out into the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Egypt who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the female servant who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the animals. And then there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as was not like it before, nor shall be like it again." And Pharaoh's servants heard Moses' terrifying words. "Pharaoh, you've got to listen to him. This is a man sent from a great God. He has power that we cannot withstand. Shall we all die? We can't bury all the dead now. Listen to Moses and let the Israelites go." Exodus 11, verse 3. The Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt, in the sight of Pharaoh's servants, and in the sight of the people. But Pharaoh only laughed in scorn. "You and your God can't touch me. I'm a God." Moses looked back at Pharaoh and said, verse 8, "All these your servants shall come down to me and bow down to me, saying, 'Get out!' And all the people who follow you, 'Get out!' After that, I will go out." And Moses turned and walked away in anger and in sorrow at what Pharaoh had doomed his nation to suffer. God then began to explain to Moses what he was going to do and how the people of Israel were to be protected from the coming death plague that would slay the firstborn of Egypt. After Moses received the instructions, he called for the elders of Israel to assemble to hear the news. Exodus 12, verse 21. "Pick out and take lambs for yourselves according to your families, and then kill the Passover lamb. And you shall take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that's in the basin, strike the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood that's in the basin. And then none of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning. For the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians. And when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to strike you." News of what was about to happen spread quickly among the people. Joe Israelite could not believe what he was hearing. That evening, he began to explain to Rebekah and their children what was about to happen. It all seemed so impossible. They'd never heard of anything like this happening before. Joe said, "We've seen how God has spared us from most of the plagues on the Egyptians. So now we have to trust him that he will spare us from this too." And Joe's little son Eli, his firstborn son, looked up at his father and said, "Father, I'm frightened. What do you mean by all this? I don't understand. I'm scared." And Joe smiled lovingly at his little boy. "It'll be all right, son. We were told to call it the Passover sacrifice of the Lord. He will pass over the houses of all of our people, our house too, tonight, when he strikes the Egyptian firstborn. He will spare all of our households. So don't be afraid." And with that, Joe led his young family in prayer as they bowed their heads and worshiped God for the first time in a very long time. "Oh Lord God, we had forgotten you. We didn't know you existed. But you haven't forgotten us. Thank you for this promise of freedom that you have brought through your servant Moses." And Joseph and Rebekah wept with joy. Still, Joe could not help but worry. This was too good to be true. The next day, Joe Israelite and his family selected the lamb from among the flock that would be used for the blood and for the special meal that Moses had told them about. "This one?" Eli asked. "No, son, that one has a mark on him, see? He can't be used. The lamb has to be just right." "How about this little guy? He's very cute, isn't he, father?" said Eli. "Yes, son, That's the one. Now we'll have to keep him in the house for 4 days. But then, Eli, this lamb will be our sacrifice to God. And Eli was very sad to think about that. And for a couple of days, he played with the lamb. But finally, in the late afternoon of the 13th of Nisan, as sunset approached, Joe gathered his family around. "It's almost time," he said. His wife and all the others had been told to prepare unleavened bread and unsweetened vegetables and herbs to eat with the lamb. "They'll be ready soon," Rebecca said. "That's good," replied Joseph. "So now is the time for us all to change into the clothes that we'll be wearing for a very long journey." And then in about an hour, the sun had set. The 14th of Nisan had begun. "It's time," Joseph said. "Eli, bring me the little lamb now, and let's go outside." "No," he cried. "Abba, please, please don't kill our little lamb. I love him." And tears started streaming down little Eli's face and Joe's face too. "I know, son. I know. I love him too. But we must obey God. The blood of this lamb put on our doorpost is the only thing, Eli, that will save your life tonight from God's wave of death that's coming to all the firstborn in the land." And with that, Joe took the lamb and slit the throat of this precious little lamb. In a few moments, he stopped shaking, and the lamb became limp. His blood poured out, filling the basin that had been prepared to collect it. Eli and his little brother and sister cried for the lamb. So did Joseph and Rebecca. And Joe took a brush and painted their doorstep, their doorpost, with its blood. Before too much longer, the meal was ready. And they shared part of their meal with an elderly couple who lived next to them. And they all talked quietly about what was about to happen. And then an eerie silence had come over the community. Nobody was outside now, because they had all been warned not to leave their homes at all that night. And as midnight approached, the silence was broken. Screams of anguish began to be heard from the homes of nearby Egyptian families. Chapter 12, verse 29. "And it came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of livestock. And so Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all of his servants and all the Egyptians. And there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. And Joe Israelite gathered his family close to him. Let's try to get some sleep now. We have much to do in the morning." It seemed they had barely closed their eyes when Joe and his wife were awakened early the next morning by loud voices and knocking at the door. "Get out of here," the people were yelling. "Leave us! Leave us before we're all dead." And Joe and Rebecca looked at each other. "It's some Egyptians outside." "Rebecca, it's true. This is actually going to happen, just like Moses said. We're leaving Egypt today." And Joe and his family went outside and found several Egyptians who had brought loaded wagons into their small neighborhood filled with all kinds of supplies. But there were also several carts loaded with large trunks. "Take all of this," the Egyptian man said, It's all yours. Everything is yours. It's not doing us any good. We're all as good as dead anyway. And Joe looked inside one of the trunks, and to his surprise, it was filled with gold and silver vessels. "Why, this must be worth a fortune," he said to his wife. Rebecca looked inside another trunk and found some beautiful, expensive clothing. "There's a lot more where that came from," said one Egyptian. "Whatever you want, just take it." Exodus 12, verse 33. And the Egyptians urged the people that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, "We shall all be dead." Verse 35. Now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, of gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they granted them whatever they requested. Thus, they plundered the Egyptians. So all the rest of the day, Joe Israelite and his family made their final preparations. Most of the time was spent gathering the wagons and the carts and loading it up with all their possessions and then all the treasures that the Egyptians had brought them. "Eli, you and your little brother and sister, you go gather the sheep and bring them around to the front of the house." And Joe went to round up the dozen cattle that he still had foraging for food out in the field. It was getting late in the afternoon. Rebecca had been so busy, she had not taken any time to prepare food. "It's okay," Joe told her. "It's okay, just bring along your mixing pans, along with the meal and the flour and the oil, and we'll eat tonight." Just then, a series of long trumpet blasts began to sound throughout the plains of Goshen. "This is it," Joe shouted. "That's the signal. It's time to go." Shouts of joy rose up from all the families surrounding Joe Israelite. "Can you believe it? We're free. We're free." And Joe gathered up his family and he put the children up on the cart that was being drawn by two oxen. And he looked at Rebecca, tears streaming down his face. "We've suffered so much, but it's over. Let's go to the promised land. They say it flows with milk and honey." And with that, Joe and his wife and children began to walk away from what had been their home for generations. And Joe thought to himself, "I'll remember this night for the rest of my life. This is 430 years to the day since God reconfirmed his special covenant with their almost forgotten ancestor, a man named Abraham." Instructions had been given for all the families in the many Israelite communities throughout the land of Goshen that they were to make their way south as quickly as possible toward the Egyptian city of Ramses. And so before long, they could no longer see their little village behind them. But what they did begin to see, coming from all different directions, was what seemed to be a never-ending line of people, of cattle, of various other livestock and wagons and carts. "Why, just look at all these people," Joe exclaimed. "There's so many of us." Actually, Joe and his family really had no idea just how many Israelites there were throughout Goshen. All they'd ever known was their own little community because their taskmasters had made them work from dawn to dark every day. Walk to the job site. Walk out to wherever you can to find the grain stubble. Work all day. Walk home. Try to sleep. That was it, day after day, month after month, and year after year. There was no realization that this existence was being repeated in Israelite communities several miles away, or just how many Israelites there actually were. Joe Israelite and his family, as were most families, were kept isolated from other Israelites because the Egyptians feared a rebellion if they were allowed to assemble together in large groups. There's a lot of us here. They didn't know it. But now Joe and the other Israelite families were able to see that they indeed were a vast army of people heading now towards Ramses. "Why, there are tens of thousands of us," Joe said. "I had no idea." Joe still had no idea how many they really were. As they were finally approaching the city of Ramses, the full moon was shining brightly above them. It was about this time that trumpets began to sound again, and the people stopped. A man on horseback came riding towards their group, and several other riders could be seen as well. "You must organize your families," the man shouted to them. "Stay with your family, your tribe, but also form into small units of 50 families who will travel together under the leadership of a captain. Lift up a banner identifying your group and your family all around, for all around you to see, and then follow that banner, because we must stay together as an organized group as we march through Ramses." Joe and the others around him agreed that this made sense, and they quickly made sure that they were following these directions that were given. Within an hour, Joe and his family found themselves walking through the center of this once majestic and beautiful city that now lay in ruins. "Just look at this devastation," he gasped. "The power of God has destroyed this great city." And it was the same thing everywhere they looked. No plant life, no grass, toppled trees, smashed buildings, carcasses of dead animals and people lying on the ground. The light of hundreds of small fires could be seen flickering throughout the city. The foul stench of death filled the air. What few people that were out on the streets were begging them for food, begging them to be allowed to go with them. "What's happened here?" asked Eli. Joe said, "God has shown his mercy, and he has set us free from slavery to these Egyptians, son. We're free men now. We're going to a new home. Eli, never forget what you're seeing tonight. We'll celebrate this night as long as we live." And with that, Joe Israelite and his family, along with a vast multitude of others, began to leave the city of Ramses. Standing up on the wall next to the gate stood a man with his hands up in the air, holding a staff in one hand. "Look, son, look, that's Moses. This is the man God has chosen to lead us to the promised land." Exodus 12, verse 37. Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot, besides children. And the mixed multitude went up with them also, and flocks and herds, a great deal of livestock. And so they walked all that night, and it seemed as if it was a miracle. Nobody was too tired to walk. Even the older, feeble men and women found that they had renewed strength. But early in the morning, a messenger arrived near Joe Israelite and his group. "I have a message from Moses," he said. "Everyone gather around and listen to me. This is the message that Moses has for all of Israel." Exodus 13, verse 3. "Remember this day in which you went up out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. For by strength of hand, the Lord has brought you out of this place. No leavened bread shall be eaten. On this day you are going out in the month of Abib. And it shall be when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Hivites, and Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, that land flowing with milk and honey, that you shall keep this service in its month. And 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. And on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. No leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. And you shall tell your son in that day, saying, this is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt. And it shall be a sign for you on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand the Lord has brought you up out of Egypt. You shall therefore keep this ordinance in its season from year to year. And when the messenger concluded these words, he said, you will rest today. We will continue our journey at sunset. And all the families around Joe agreed, we need a day of rest anyway. And we are very hungry. Maybe we'll enjoy this unleavened flat bread. The next day, after traveling about 8 miles, they arrived at a place known as Succoth. It was already late in the afternoon, and everyone now was very tired and needed to rest. There were so many people that despite the occasional stop to rest, some people were always moving. Their captain was already encouraging them to start up again after what seemed to be just a few hours of rest. And now they were headed to a location known as Etham. This is not exactly the way I thought we might be traveling, Joe Israelite said to his traveling companions. I thought we'd be heading northeast, but we're still traveling south. Exodus 13, verse 17. God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. And so God led the people around by way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. That's right, Joe's friend said. That's just it. How are we supposed to know exactly where to go out here? Why, there are so many of us, and here we are heading into the desert. What if we get lost out here? A few hours later, Joe's friend and everyone else throughout the camp of Israel was going to get a very unexpected answer. Soon, a small white cloud appeared in the eastern sky. Nothing unusual about that. But over the next few minutes, the cloud grew larger and larger and began to extend higher like a massive pillar rising above them. It was high enough now in the sky that all the Israelites, over 2.5 million of them, could clearly see it. Before long, a messenger again came toward Joe's camp. He blew a trumpet to get the attention of everyone around. This cloud will be our guide, he shouted. This cloud is the very presence of God. When it moves, we move. When it stops, we stop. And tonight, when the sun is set, this cloud will transform into a bright pillar of blazing fire, and God will provide light and warmth for us, and he will show us the way to the promised land. Exodus 13, 21. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. And the people of Israel were amazed. How powerful is this God of Moses? Where's he been all these years? Why did we have to live in slavery for so long? And now, God of Moses is showing us his great power to free us from Egypt. But will he stay with us? Will he really take us all the way to the land promised to our forefathers? Is this too good to be true? I want to do what's right for my family. But can I really trust Moses out here in this desert wilderness after all? These thoughts of doubt filled the mind of Joe Israelite as it was time once again to start walking south. So what have we learned from this part of the Exodus story today? What does all this have to do with the observance of the days of unleavened bread? God has his own timetable in dealing with us. Even when he seems to be absent or far away, he's not. He's always right there. There was a time in our lives, maybe from our birth, or it depends on when we were called, but there was a time when we were hopelessly in slavery to sin. And it had a tight grip on us, and there was nothing we could do to escape it. We had all sinned. We had all come under the penalty of sin. And we had nothing to look forward to. Nothing. Except suffering and eventual eternal death. That price of our sins had to be paid. And it was paid by the shed blood of the Lamb of God. At some time in our lives, we received a special calling from God. And he showed us his presence in our lives, after all, many times through unexplained miracles. And we were given a choice to make. Remain in sin or follow the path out of sin that leads to a promised land. And most of us have chosen to take the path revealed to us. When that decision is first made, there is great joy and anticipation. You realize God's called me into a wonderful life, and everything's going to be great. The journey's going to be easy after all. How do we know? Because we see God's hand evident all around us now. We know God exists. We know he's there helping us. We've seen wonderful miracles in our lives. He's helped me to keep my job despite needing off for the Sabbath. He's helped me have a better marriage. I know God is with me. Yes, he is. And you've come to realize you could have never done any of this on your own without him. There is no way you could have made this journey out of a life of sin. And you now realize the price that was paid for you to be able to follow Jesus Christ to the promised land. It took his shed blood. That innocent lamb that did not deserve to die. No more than the little lamb in the Israelites' family. And you cry to realize it. And you're determined now to follow him wherever he leads. He's proven to you that he loves you. And you're going to start the journey with his help. I think I'm ready to go. I think I can successfully make this journey. But just as you start your journey to follow Jesus Christ with great joy and anticipation, that path makes an unexpected turn. It's not going where you thought or the way you thought. Despite your initial obedience and enthusiasm, this new unexpected direction begins to fill you with doubts. And we'll pick it up there in part 3 in the next and final sermon in the series as we examine what it was like to be trapped at the Red Sea and then conclude the story of the Exodus from Egypt with the golden calf and the evil report of the spies.